Welcome to a special bonus episode of The McFuture. I'm Steve Factor, and today I want to talk about something that has been keeping everyone from accomplishing anything, and that is Donald J. Trump. Even the blogs that typically write about technology and startups, all of them are writing about Trump. The good news is, I think he's making us great again, but not in the way you think, and definitely not in the way he thinks he is. I found the pearl in this rotten oyster. I was thinking back to a piece I wrote satirically called Why I Endorse Donald Trump. I wrote it in March of 2016 when he was still running for the nomination. This is just an excerpt. I don't think a failed cartoonish campaign teaches anyone a lesson. We need 4 years of protests on the street with bonfires and billy clubs against Der Trump to get Republicans, Democrats, and independents fighting for the same cause, rediscovering our shared values. To rise again, we need to hit rock bottom. And rock bottom has just landed like an orange, fluffy, fiery meteor from planet Bravo. So rejoice, Americans. Our eventual painful resurgence is upon us. I think it's happening. I actually see it happening. You know how when you have a stroke or a heart attack, you wake up in the hospital and that machine is blinking, you know, the heartbeat machine or whatever it is, the one that's in every movie, and you see the IV drip in your arm. And that's the thing that finally wakes you up to the idea that, hey, maybe a muffin and Cheetos for breakfast every day was not your best idea. And finally you change your diet. Well, I think that's happening to us. There are 10 things I came up with that are going to make us great again, not because of what Donald Trump is doing for us, but what he's doing to us. So see if you support me on this super positive outlook. You better, because it might be the thing that gets you through the next 4 years. So the first thing is, he's rekindling civic participation. People are finally getting involved. They're getting involved in protests. They're getting involved in local politics. And I bet you more people will be voting over the next, 4 to 8 years than have voted before. And more people are going to be running for office because they're seeing that that's the only way for them to really make change if they're dissatisfied with their current representatives. And I don't see how they couldn't be. That's a positive. The second thing is, it's forcing our conversation on what America stands for. What the hell are we? What are our values? What's our role in the world? What are our obligations to our citizens and to immigrants? Do we owe people health care? How many people do we let in? What do we owe to refugees where maybe we help destabilize their region? These are conversations that we have not had in a very long time, at least not this way. And he's forcing that conversation, maybe in extremely unpleasant or in very stupid ways, but he is forcing that conversation, and it's a good one to have. He's also, number three, making us confront this failing public education system. And it's failing on multiple levels. So at one level, you see this imbalance, right? So you could have a public education in a really rich neighborhood, and those kids have iPads and laptops and masseuses to rub their feet while they study. And then you've got the poor districts where the kids are completely disinterested, where there's crime and danger and packed classrooms in Detroit and parts of New York and Chicago. It's a mess. So it's completely unequal in terms of opportunity. And education is the ultimate opportunity. So that's not inequality of outcomes, which a lot of people are asking for, but it's inequality of opportunity. And that's something that needs to be fixed. The other level, it's failing even for the rich schools because we're teaching the wrong things. Everyone is being prepared like they were in the 1950s. They're learning a bunch of facts. They're applying those facts. That's not what matters anymore. You need to have grit. You need to have effort. You need to have critical thinking. You need to have skepticism. You need to know how to work with people. You need to innovate. All of these things, they don't even know how to teach them. Here's a new rule. Anything you can yell out for Alexa from Amazon to answer, does not need to be taught in school. And I know that knowing who the third president was, and who was the third president anyway, it's a disaster. But knowing these things almost doesn't matter. Yes, maybe some basic foundational things. We're going to have that conversation whether we like it or not. Number four, he's slowly forcing Republicans and Democrats on the same side. I'm going to call that side sanity. And hopefully these relationships will carry over into other things. Number five, he's forcing this overdue scrutiny of media. Media has failed us. In his own stupid way, he's forcing them to raise their game. So when he says, hey, I'm not going to appear on CNN and no one from my administration is going to appear on CNN, guess what? That's going to force CNN to get more creative. That's going to force them to find whistleblowers or to do investigative reporting, to do all the stuff that they've been neglectful of. Because all these guys have been doing is chasing clicks and chasing ratings. All of a sudden, that's going to have to change because he is outing them. He is forcing them to up their game. And that is a great thing for every single American. Number six. He's waking everybody up to the blue-collar struggle in America. I don't know that anything he's promising is actually going to help them. Even if we brought all manufacturing on Earth back to the United States, I don't think most of those people would have jobs because all new factories are going to be automated. There are people who really are facing the possibility of never working again, and that's pretty frightening. And when you see a guy who at least talks about your problems, whether his solutions make sense or not, doesn't matter. He's at least saying he's going to focus on it. That matters to people. And that's part of the reason, maybe the main reason that he got elected, whether it's truthful or not. It's attracted other people's attention on the problem. Entrepreneurs, local government. The other thing he's bringing focus on, number seven, is vestiges of racism. It's still out there, and we kind of ignored it for a while. When Trump won, at least for the first few days, a lot of these guys got really emboldened and started doing some crazy stuff. It's probably the same guys who flip cars over when their hockey team loses the championship. I'd rather have these people on the surface so we know who they are and how to confront them and deal with them. And when I say confront, I don't mean yelling at them. I mean really engaging. There's a guy who is on CNN, this guy Van Jones. He's done a great series. He's a liberal guy, but super thoughtful, super smart. And he's one of the few people on the left that's actually engaging people to their face, Trump supporters, people who might have some racist inclinations. And he's done this series where he goes into Trump country, into red states, and he actually talks to people like they're people. He actually listens. And you know what? The Democratic Party better sign that guy up and run him for president or something, because he's one of the few people that that really gets it. And gets how you need to engage with others and how you come to constructive solutions. Of course, Trump has Ben Carson on the case, so clearly that'll be solved. I'm kidding. But listen, the issue has been surfaced, and that's a good thing. Number eight, he's finally going to kill political correctness. People got consumed with all the hashtags, the fat shaming and the white privilege and all this other stuff that is accusatory, but not that constructive. Bill Maher did a great piece on this. I'm going to link it in the show notes. What Trump is doing is he's pushing all of that stuff to the side by putting real problems on the table, by either creating them or messing something up. Healthcare, jobs, immigration, education, all of that stuff is going to take the place of all of the non-problems that people have been focused on. And Bill Maher had this great quote at the end of his piece. He said, stop protecting your virgin ears and start noticing you're getting fucked in the ass. I apologize for the language, but that's a really legitimate way to think about it. Number nine, he's educating us about foreign policy and trade and the military and all of the consequences of our foreign policy. You may disagree with all of his policy. I disagree with all the protectionism he's talking about and the tariffs and even questioning how we engage with Russia. All of these things we've taken for granted. We just assumed, hey, what we've been doing makes sense, so let's keep doing that. And maybe it doesn't. let's reevaluate these things. And he's challenging all of our presumptions. Should Vladimir Putin be a friend or a foe? Look, I think Vladimir Putin is a very sneaky, I wouldn't say evil, but really thoughtful KGB guy who knows what he wants and knows how to retain power. He's your typical strongman, and he knows how to manipulate foreign leaders. So I'm concerned that he'll manipulate Trump as well. But regardless, we need to be rethinking what we're doing, because a lot of our interventions and a lot of our trade policy has not worked out. So let's ask those questions again. And he's forcing us to do that, even if his conclusions and his ideas are not great again. And finally, he's forcing foreign leaders to lead. For the longest time, the U.S. has been funding everything, the U.N. and NATO. And whenever there's a foreign crisis, like a tsunami, the U.S. leads. We're the ones who send aid. We're the ones who send trucks and military support. That's something that the West and Western Europe has gladly given over to us. We have provided moral leadership and, listen, sometimes misguided intervention, and they've been more than happy to let us do it. Countries in the East have never even tried. China has never tried to lead. They've never tried. Look at the charitable donations from China. Nothing. They have never stepped onto the global stage. Neither has India. And these are big, growing economies. Finally, they're going to be forced to step up, and so is Europe, because I don't expect a lot of leadership coming from us, not in any visionary sense. That's a good thing that we are now putting the onus on others to step up. The next 4 years, don't get me wrong, are not going to be pretty, but they're going to be incredibly gratifying. For the first time in a long time, people are taking power into their hands. They're seeing the power they've always had, but have taken for granted. And they're going to see progress. And when they see that progress, waves of purpose and satisfaction are going to wash over them. They will start to feel like they can do things. That is what's going to make us great again. This time, we're grabbing America by the pussy, and we're not letting go. I'm Steve Factor. See you next week on The McFuture. All of this stuff that Trump is doing could be viewed from a very different lens. Not that he's trying to destroy America, which a lot of the protesters would tell you as they're screaming, Hitler, Hitler. He's actually treating this as aggressive first bids in a bigger negotiation. When you negotiate, you ask for a lot more than you actually want. So then when you start negotiating, you're giving up things you didn't even care about in the first place and end up somewhere close to the position you actually wanted. Trump is doing the same thing. A good example is this visa ban. It's not really a ban. It's more of a detention or an extra vetting. He put visa holders and green card holders on that list. He knows that's crazy, but in the process of negotiating that back, he's going to keep all the other stuff he actually wants. This is creating a massive distraction. People's attention is so focused on this one guy and these specific executive orders that they're missing the bigger picture, which is, are there enough checks and balances to keep him from doing more crazy stuff? What's interesting is that system broke down in Bush and Obama administrations. And if you look at the last 8 years, the same people who were protesting were completely silent. Obama killed more foreigners with drones than any other president in history. He's created this huge domestic spying program. He spies on his own citizens. He assassinated U.S. citizens on foreign soil. And he signed a ton of executive orders to get around Congress. No one said anything because they liked the guy. He played basketball. He had a nice family. He could dance. I don't know. He was a likable guy. Even people who didn't like his policies, like him. Now we're at a point where the very same powers that he used are in the hands of someone they hate. So people are waking up. But they're waking up, I think, to the wrong thing. What they should be waking up to is the government has gotten too big. It's gotten too powerful. There's too much money floating around, especially in the federal level. You know, when you have a broken school and your kid is getting dumber by the minute, the parents, or at least concerned ones, are going to march in there to the school or to the school district, and they're going to make some noise until things are fixed. If someone at the federal level, at the education department, makes a decision, no one's marching in. No one's going to say anything. They're completely unaccountable. But they've got budget and power, and a bunch of corporations are going to lobby the hell out of them to get all kinds of contracts and get at all that money. Take away the money, you take away the power and the incentive for corruption. And then you force accountability into lower levels of government. Now, maybe people are waking up to the possibility that this much power is not a great idea if the wrong person gets into office.